You're listening to the Ultimate Road Trip Podcast, sponsored by the Classic Motor Hub. Hi everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Ultimate Road Trip Podcast. This week it's more about boats than cars. Well, when I say boats, I mean super yachts. Like many people, they've held a certain fascination for me ever since I first went to the south of France. Who can resist a surreptitious gawp into the rare air of a gin palace when going for a mooch around a port in Cannes or Saint-Tropez? Now, when American TV producer Rebecca Henning was thinking of the next reality TV pitch, she drew on her previous experience of working on a yacht and came up with Below Deck, the show which follows a superyacht crew and their guests in far-flung locations from the Caribbean to Croatia. At the time, Downton Abbey was one of the most popular shows on TV, so an upstairs, downstairs on the water reality show was seen as a possible success, and the first series aired in 2013. 9 series later, along with 3 spin-off series, Below Deck Mediterranean, Below Deck Sailing Yacht and Below Deck Down Under, it has a big fan base worldwide, including in the UK after it debuted on E4 and then started streaming on Netflix during the first lockdown. The crew are international too, with one of the most popular being Chef Ben Robinson, who was born in the UK but now lives in Florida, and he joins me for this week's Ultimate Road Trip Podcast. Ben's parents moved to the US when he was small, but he went to boarding school in Britain, travelling back to the States at holiday time. And his culinary journey, as you'll hear, started with him helping his mum at home. After stints in Michelin-starred kitchens in the UK and Europe, he found himself cooking on a private yacht in America, and then auditioned for Below Deck, appearing in the first series, quickly gaining a big following. After 7 series on the show, he's now mainly land-based, specialising private catering, travelling worldwide, and he's a certified health coach too, covering weight loss, addiction and cancer. I had a great chat with Ben early this year from his apartment in Fort Lauderdale. We covered how he coped with lockdown, as well as his future plans, along with, of course, his experience in front of the camera for Below Deck. And what about the road trip? Well, to paraphrase the opening lyrics of a track from the classic album he's chosen for the tune, it's not a pickup he's buying to drive to LA, but it's pretty close. Hi all. As you've just been hearing, this week on the podcast is great that I'm joined by Chef Ben Robinson. He joins me from his home in Fort Lauderdale. Ben, I think that's where you are.
Yeah, well, maybe we're not as metropolitan as we think over here.
Thanks so much for your time this afternoon. I mean, we're going to talk about road trips. We're going to talk about yachts. We're going to talk about chefing. But before we get on to the road trip and before we talk a little bit about you, can I ask how things have been for you over the past few months, the past couple of years? Because lockdown, of course, hit the catering industry hard. I've had a couple of top UK chefs, James Martin and Tom Kerridge, on the podcast, and they really had to diversify what they were doing. And of course, yes, for you, it's catering and travel. You go to all corners of the world. Of course, we've seen you in Below Deck and Below Deck Med, which of course we'll come back to you. But with your business, your catering business and your travel side of the business, it must have been especially challenging.
And it was. It was very challenging, but you know, we were lucky to have a platform, and we were approached by Escoffier School, which has a big online presence, and they know that I love making pizza. So I actually did a tutorial start to finish on how to make a pizza. Mm-hmm. And the school really loved it, but I kept the licensing deal. So I started actually selling the tutorials online, and organically we wanted to just keep our fans happy. And we just felt like, you know, it's a big part of having a platform. You use it, particularly when everyone's just staring at their computer screen and they're locked down. So yeah. We started doing a lot of Instagram lives, and we were doing pizza. And then we kind of had this novel idea to actually start selling the pizza kits. So we actually boxed up the paddle, the ladle, the peel, the stone, the flour, the yeast, and the tomatoes. And and started selling them. And then actually we were approached by Fortune 500 companies like LexisNexis, Comcast. And we did lots of these. We sold all these pizza boxes to these companies and followed them with Zooms. So it was really nice because, you know, if whether you be a family member and you're kind of trapped with your family or you're in isolation and you're single, it brought a lot of these members of the company together, you know, and a lot of them are all over the world, you know, working remotely and all that. So it was just a really great project for us. And we really span it around. And we try not to celebrate, you know, that we did better in COVID or we did very well in COVID, because obviously a lot of people died and a lot of people went out of business. But so it's kind of a touchy subject, but I guess we actually did really well. And it was the pizza really saved us, to be honest.
Along with, and you had a great name as well, Escoffier, in the cage.
Right.
Well, behind
exactly.
You as well.
And I'm friends with the owner, Jeff Larson, and we've become really good friends, and we'll probably continue to do projects together, but the stars just aligned and we just went for it. You've got to read the signs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But talking about lockdown and over here in the UK, just talking, going on a little bit about Below Deck, which of course is what kind of got your name out there, Below Deck and Below Deck Med. It only started to air in the UK on E4, Below Deck Med, that was, halfway through lockdown. It was 2021, wasn't it, when UK viewers became aware of the show, and everybody's at home, as you say, looking at their computer screens or TV screens. And I don't know, like a lot of people, like myself and my wife, we thought we want to travel vicariously around the world. And Below Deck Med kind of helps us do that, because what you want to see sun, you want to see sea and yachts and all these incredible people from all corners of the globe working together, you as crew and all these incredible kind of eclectic clients and guests. So again, that was stars aligned. In terms of UK viewers, of course, you've been on what, Bravo TV since 2013. You were in the first ever Below Deck series, and so I suppose that's been great as well for the show.
Well, yes, and I think the stars did align. It started airing on Netflix as well globally, and it was a real boost for the show and obviously for the cast members. So again, we got really lucky with that, and I picked up a lot of English followers, and the English have actually taken to me. I never knew how that was going to work out, but I thought eventually the Brits would see me on that show, thank God they liked me, because I was a little apprehensive.
You had a really British way, even though you've lived in America a long time. Your humour is very British, and your kind of, you know, your sarcasm, just a way of dealing with people in a very nice way, I might add, kind of obviously drew people to you, and that made for a really good show. Because I'm not one for reality TV, but it really was a great show to kind of, as I say, vicariously travel. And I know you're not involved with it anymore. You do your little shows on Instagram. I've seen them with catching up with your old crewmates. So that must be fun, keeping in contact with everybody.
Yeah, that was good. I did it with Kate, my friend Kate. She's good. She actually lives in my building, so that was really handy. But I actually, I was under construction all of last year, so it was a real pain in the ass. I had to like move concrete bags and black out my windows with garbage bags and set up and all of the rest of it while we were staying at an Airbnb down the road.
Right.
I mean, it was absolute mayhem last year, but we decided to throw the book at my apartment, and because, you know, we were on the fence, should we sell it or should we make it better, and we chose a good year to do it, but unfortunately we didn't have as much travel going on, so we couldn't really piggyback off that, but we did do Galley Talk, and that was a real blessing. It was I mean, who can complain? We're getting paid to literally sit down, get pissed at 11 in the morning, drinking champagne.
Nice job if you can get it.
We're like, we were like half in the bag by 4 p.m., you know. And then we traditionally would take my little boat out and go for a cruise, Kate and I. So it brought us together, and it was a really great project. So a lot of good things came out of COVID. And again, I don't celebrate that. I generally don't. I don't brag about that, because a lot of people really did suffer. Yeah. But it did play such interesting roles in markets. I mean, who knew, you know, we wouldn't get, I mean, I have broker friends who sell boats and they got no inventory. You know, the property in South Florida has just gone ridiculous over here.
And yeah,
it's amazing what a pandemic can see. And I'm actually interested in markets and, you know, stocks and stuff. And, you know, I actually made a big mistake. I made some good moves, but I've actually shorted Starbucks and Lululemon. And Lululemon was, I just thought, well, no one's going to go to the gym. But I got it all wrong. Everyone started buying Lululemon.
Yeah, yeah.
The stock doubled because everyone was working out from home and they wanted to look sexy and they were doing their little Instagram stuff. I didn't see that. So, I mean, reading the market's really tough. What I'm learning to do now is I go, well, do the opposite and then try and understand why the opposite is the right move.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, you've got to roll with the punches, I think, is the phrase.
Yeah, you do. We did some local events. We did fly out a little bit here and there, you know, did some house parties. Traveling, still a nightmare. It's all mask mandated and that. But, you know, we're always hungry, and we never turn down work if the deal is okay.
Yeah.
So we're good, and things are picking up now. We've got really exciting projects now. So, I mean, I do think that COVID or Omicron or whatever the hell you want to call it now is, you know, it's passing by now.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Well, we'll chat a little bit about your projects towards the end, but let's get on to the road trip.
Yeah, man.
You know, we know you for boats, but we're talking about cars. Question one, I ask everybody the five questions. The first question is, what is the car for your ultimate road trip? The make, the model, and the color.
Okay, well, that's a good question. Okay, so I do like my car.
Okay.
I have the new Land Rover Discovery HSI6 or whatever it is. It's fully loaded. It's an absolute beast. It's Portofino blue, white interior leather. It's so comfy. Being a Brit, I didn't want to get a Chevy or anything like that. But I love my car. I think a close second. I do love the G Wagon as well.
The
I
AMG,
like that military sort of look.
The G65, you know? Or the G55.
Oh, yeah, they rip, man. It's like it's like having a jet engines on the back of it. It's pretty
crazy.
They're
everywhere now, aren't they? They're just...
Yeah, they're stupidly expensive, but I'm really happy with my Land Rover Discovery. I really love it.
So that is...
And it hasn't broken down on me yet, so we're winning.
That's good. Comparing to some of their product... Exactly, Land Rover products of the past. Some of, you know, Range Rovers circa 92 weren't that great, but
I had one of them and it drove me nuts. Vanity is a cruel mistress.
Well, when it comes to cars, you need a bit of that. Land Rover, particularly, have you always been a Land Rover fan? I mean, why? The question too is why the Discovery? I mean, obviously the new Defender, which I've driven, is fabulous. I haven't driven the new Range Rover, but the Discovery, why that car and why British? Do you just want to keep hold of your British roots?
I do. I also really like the way they look. I actually went planning on getting a Range Rover and it just caught my eye. And I was like, what's going on with that? The Range Rover is not as big as my Discovery. And we haul a lot of stuff because we have a catering company, but so that's handy, but it caught my eye, and he said, yeah, a customer that was his wish car and all the rest of it, but he backed out of the deal, and it was just gorgeous. And I was like, But I don't like being, you know, forced into decisions. So I was kind of apprehensive, like, is it too good to be true? But I went with it and I was like, yeah, this is my car. And I love it.
Well, when it comes to cars, people stick with their favorite brands. I mean, Land Rover is an iconic brand, obviously, and doing great guns across the world. They always have done. The destination, question three, you've traveled since you were small. I mean, just reading your bio, you born in Oxford, your parents moved to Fort Lauderdale, but you'd already been training as a chef. You were in Italy, then you came back and worked for Mr. Blumenthal at the Fat Duck, and then you went out to you went out to the States for holidays. Is that right? Because your parents had moved out and you were still at school in the UK.
It's a little awkward online, but okay. So I actually was born in Oxford. Then I moved to Cape Cod for about 4 or 5 years. Then my parents took all the kids. There's now four of us.
Right.
Took us to England, put us through boarding school, which, by the way, is not as privileged as people think. It's like basically going to jail at the age of seven. And then we actually continued to summer in Cape Cod. So I was really blessed. And if you think rural countryside and Cape Cod shorelines, I mean,
Nothing better, from a culinary
standpoint, I mean, you're winning. You've got the game and the river fish, and then you're picking clams on the beach and catching fluke off the dock and all the rest of it. So, I mean, really, really lovely. And I definitely attribute some of that to my culinary background.
And then you've traveled across the world with your culinary endeavors, and you were on yachts well before Below Deck. So to try and pick a destination for a trip in a car isn't easy, but where would you pick? Where's the destination? It could be a hotel or a restaurant. The Fat Duck actually was chosen by a couple of my guests, including Nick Mason from Pink Floyd. He wants to end up at the Fat Duck.
Okay,
so yeah, wherever you want to go, hotel, bar, restaurant, club.
All right, well, okay, so I do have this catering company, and it has taken me through America. We've gone to places I would never ordinarily go, but there is a missing link, and I believe I've done some of the West Coast. I've been to, you know, Mexico, Cabo, Central America. I've been to LA, San Diego, San Francisco.
Yeah.
But there's a chunk from San Fran to Seattle. I've been to Seattle, but there's a chunk in that shoreline that I have not ventured, and I would really love it. And the landscape is incredible. Obviously, the desert, the mountains, the shoreline, and wine country as well.
I'm going to say Napa Valley, just up there.
So that's definitely something and feasible. You know, I didn't want to get ridiculous. Also, it is a Land Rover, so. You know, you don't want to be going through the Sahara or anything.
No, not really. What's that? About 3 days, 4 days to drive? Have you driven across the States?
I drive up to Cape Cod, and I've done it in one fail swoop. It takes like 23 hours straight.
Right.
And I've done that, but I've never actually crossed America the other side. And I think that's quite a big journey. It's considerably longer.
Yeah.
Don't quote me, but I think it's... Well, I don't know. It's probably at least 3,000 miles, isn't it? You know,
yeah, probably
maybe even more. So that's a good stint. But yeah, that's where I'd like to go.
Brilliant. Who are you taking? Who's a passenger? Alive or dead? There could be a culinary master from the past. Could be one of your ex captains, Captain Lee or Captain Sandy. If you had to choose, now I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to ask you to choose.
You know what? Does it have to be a human?
No. Especially if you like your own company, that's, you know.
I think I'd take my dog, to be honest.
Your dog, who's had some Instagram moments, yeah.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, she has her own page and everything. She's killing it.
What's her name again?
Moofy. She's Moofy. Actually at the groomer. I was hoping to have her on the show with me, but she's got to do the dog thing.
Well, of course. Keep her looking good. So she's in the passenger seat. I like that. And, you know, Land Rovers and dogs go together, whether they're wet Labradors in the UK or your little Moofy.
Right. And the great thing about a dog is that they don't speak. So I could cause as much mischief as possible and no one would ever find out. So play I think that would definitely be on my side.
Play your tunes as opposed to your...
Exactly.
Which takes us on to the tune. I mean, we've come there pretty quickly. And again, I don't have any preconceived ideas about your musical taste. I was thinking, as you're from Oxford, would it be maybe Radiohead or Foles or Ride, if you're thinking of British bands? I mean, are you still into, do you keep in contact with what's going on the music scene over here?
Loosely. My girlfriend, she's into that more modern culture. From England, I actually really like 1975. I think they're wicked. Obviously, I grew up listening to Oasis and Radiohead, you mentioned. Obviously, they're cool. I think the Brits do it really well. They just got a good sense of music. They like to sing about nothing, whereas the Americans love to sing about, like, every day, like, I'm on a train or I'm in a car, you know. Yeah. Whereas English, like, they'll talk about an octopus's garden or a yellow submarine or something.
Very true.
You know? So, yeah, it's kind of more abstract, and I really like that. But I've always been a real Neil Young fan, like, ever since I was a kid. I knew every word to Harvest. And
celebrated its 50th year, I think, this year.
Yeah, I really love him. I think he's got a really interesting story. I think he has a very, very, well, he has a unique voice, and I love him. He's cool. So I'm definitely jamming out to some Neil Young.
So it'd be Harvest. I mean, MTV Unplugged, yeah. I think, is one of my favorite of the MTV Unplugged series of
Neil Young. Yeah, that's the one. That is the one.
Well, fabulous road trip. Neil Young, to see you across to Napa wine region and north of San Francisco. So it's exactly. A Land Rover with Mufi. I was thinking about your involvement with boats. I'll have to start an ultimate boat trip show and see where people are going to go.
Yeah. But just talking, not a bad idea.
Before going on, just talking about what you're up to now. So you've been involved in super yachts for many years, and isn't it incredible how the super yacht industry has gone in rude health? They've apparently doubled the super yacht fleet in the past 20 years. You know, there's seemingly so much money out there to create and to keep these incredible machines going. So was that a conscious decision to get, before Below Deck, into the super yacht industry after being at the Fat Duck?
Well, I joined the Fat Duck as an apprenticeship program a bit later on in my career. I actually started cooking in Bibendum when I was 18 in London, Michelin star.
Yeah. In the Michelin building.
That's it. Yeah. And so I started there, and then I actually worked at the Collection as well, just across the street.
Yeah.
Kept it local. And then I went to work at a really good pub, Three Rosette, called the Royal Oak, near my place in England, in Berkshire. And then I went to Boston, worked in restaurants there, then New York City. And you know what? I just got the hell beaten out of me. I wasn't making any money. I mean, I think I made, like, when I was working at Bibendum or Collection, I literally think I made £12,000.
Really?
in a year, which is,
and hard work,
tough,
as well,
man.
Being a chef, I was a waiter years ago, and I saw and that was a one star just for a few weeks, and it's a difficult environment. And how do you do that in those galleys on those yachts? They're tiny, and the heat, the air conditioning must be working overtime to keep you cool.
They're very small, but I got into it. My older brother, I actually always attributed to him. I was miserable in these cities. I was obviously getting the hell beaten out of me, working 80 hours a week, whatever, for nothing, like £1 an hour or something. And so he said, and we kind of grew up on the shorelines in Cape Cod, obviously. So we went to Nantucket and we saw the boats there. We went to Newport, Rhode Island. We saw the boats there. He said, Ben, why don't you just take a chill and get on one of those boats as a deckie? Right. I didn't know that was a chef position, and I didn't really think of it, you know. So I actually started off as a deckhand on boats.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and I wasn't very good at it, you know. I just you know, I can only clean something so many times before I get bored, right? And so we didn't have a chef on the boat. And I started cooking for the crew, and I was pulling out all this stuff out of the freezer, and, you know, like venison chops, and doing like a mocha red wine reduction with cauliflower puree. And the captain's just like, what the hell's going on with this guy, right? So finally we had a chat. And he basically dragged me by the ear to the galley, and he said, listen, what do you want to do on this boat? And I was like, I want to be the deckhand. I think that's an easy job. That's a good one. And you get to drink at 5 p.m. and, you know, it's all great.
Yeah.
In the sunshine and that. And he's like, not having it. And he's like, look, mate, that is your new office. You're really good at cooking. You can't work. You can't wash a boat to save your bloody life. If you don't like it, you can pack your bags and get off the boat, right? So I was like, sod it. All right, I'll do it. And then I kind of started walking the docks, and I learned that it's actually a great position, like way better than being a deckie.
Yeah.
Like, they get paid a lot of money, and, you know, you're a senior officer and respected and all the rest of it. So I thought, sod it, I'll do this. And, you know, so I think I was born to cook, and I really was. And I don't think you can fight it. I think if you're really born to do something, it's going to land on your lap, and you should probably, you know.
But you started when you were five. You know, your mum really got you into the cooking side of things.
Yes. And then my mum did. Like, I knew my mother's sauces, literally my mother's sauces, when I was like 6 or 7 years old. I thought they were called your mother sources because your mum taught you, right? But it's because it's the family tree of sources, right? So I actually learned that way later on.
Right.
What they are, why it was called the mother sources, but who cares why?
You could do it. You could do it.
Right, exactly. And but you know, my dad, we're not like seriously Catholic. In fact, my dad's not Catholic, but my mum is. But we had Friday fish, right?
Yeah,
my dad made fish and chips every Friday at home, and he used to pride himself on these stories. He's a writer, so all these stories of this fish swimming in, you know, off this rock shear in the North Atlantic, and the fishermen catching it and taking it to the truck, and literally it was swimming 12 hours ago. You know, like, okay, all right, Dad. But one time we had too much fish, and Dad put it in the freezer.
Right.
And being a novelist, he carried on with the same spiel. And I was like, I wasn't buying it. I was like, Dad, are you sure this fish has not been frozen? And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I can taste that freezer. I can taste literally that freezer in this fish, the smell of that freezer.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what the hell is going on around here? So, I obviously had a really acute palate. I could tell my mum would pick me up from school, and I could tell her what we were having for dinner just by the smell of her, you know.
Wow.
Like, it was kind of freaky.
Yeah.
So I was lucky and I think that's very important as well. I mean, to have a palate as a chef, you know, it's important, but not all of them have it, you know. No.
Yeah, I mean, that separates the best from the normal type of chefs. Also, your new venture, if we could just talk about that briefly. Integrated nutrition, is that right? That's the kind of thing you're getting involved with.
So I'm a holistic nutritionist, and I graduated from the Institute of Integral Nutrition actually quite a long time ago now. But what happened was, I think on Below Deck, we were getting a lot of these Californian clients, and they seemed to know a lot about nutrition. It was quite scary, actually. Like, they knew all about alkalizing and gluten and lactose and all this stuff. And I just thought, how come I'm being lectured by these guys? And, you know, I should know this stuff, you know, like, I, you know, as a personal chef or as a chef, I should be in the know when it comes to nutrition and what this food is doing to people's bodies. So I thought, let's just get qualified. And so I took a year course in it. And it was an online course, which was great. And I actually got a scholarship. I wrote them a proposal.
Right.
I gave them an offer they couldn't refuse. No, I'm just kidding. But I was on Below Deck, and I was in a privileged position to be able to, you know, boost the school or whatever. So yeah, they were happy to, you know, give me a scholarship. So I just kind of embraced it, and I think it's really important. I see it as the future. I don't think people in 5 years are going to say, I'm fed up with being healthy, let's go back to our old ways. No. I think, and also with the internet, you know, Big Pharma, you know, all of these commercial food companies, you know, there's been an unveiling, and people are actually looking now, and they know more than ever. And so I embraced it. And I don't think it should affect flavor. I think if you're a clever chef, you can make healthy food and you can make it taste good. And I think it's important. It's sustainable.
Yeah, and lockdown has made so many more people get into the getting rid of all the crap and making sure it's, as you say, the nutrition's there and the health aspect is important. As we've been in our houses and flats, cooking for ourselves far more than we would have been. You know, we'd have been out a lot more in the past 2 years, wouldn't we, if we hadn't had lockdown?
Yeah, and I think it was a healthy reset. And I noticed that I do better when I eat at home. You know, I mean, you know, your tummy, if you go out to dinner every day or every lunch, every dinner, whatever, you know, you just don't feel as good. Your tummy's not right. Your gut's not right. You know, you just don't know what the hell they're putting in it. You don't know how old the food is. Eating at home is wonderful.
Yeah. Obviously not taking away from, you know, the great chefs that are out there and doing some amazing stuff. But it's a really interesting concept, and it's a very interesting to hear you're doing that. But let's also talk about what you're doing now. I mean, you've said you won't go back to Below Deck. You must feel that was a great part of your career, getting the recognition from what you do from that show.
Yeah, of course.
Huge in the States, isn't it? And it's getting big over here now.
Oh yeah, it's big, it's strange to wrap your head around it, because I was actually done with yachting at like the age of 30. I was head chef on the biggest yacht in the world when I was 28. Did it. I killed it. And it was just like, it just beat the crap out of me. And it was, you know, I was working 20 hours a day for 4 months straight without a day off. 28 crew I was feeding four times a day with guests. I mean, it was just, I just got slammed, but I wanted it. I wanted it on my resume. I wanted to finish big. And then I actually reverted back. Things weren't doing very well. It was 2009-10, really bad climate. So I thought, you know what, screw it. Get back on a yacht. We'll just freelance. But, you know, I won't hemorrhage my money and all the rest of it. And that's when I found Below Deck. So I don't know where I would be. That was 10 years ago, you know. Right. So I thought TV was good for me. I thought, you know, actually I had an opportunity in England, but I continued to live in the States, and I thought I would probably try and get on TV. I knew I was a well-oiled machine at that point, you know. And when I saw Below Deck, I thought, you know what, let's go, let's really go out with a bang, you know. I didn't know it would
With a camera in your face. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I didn't know it would be a 10-year process. I thought the show was great, but, you know, you're in the hands of production. You never know what they're going to make of it. Personally, there are times where I think I wish it was a little more operational, but drama sells, you know, and they've killed it. So I can't tell them, you know, you didn't do a good job of the show, you know. Obviously, we all have bad moments. We wish they weren't in there, but
that's hey, life.
If it's good for ratings, that's part of it. It's actually pretty healthy to be in the hands of production, and it's very humiliating, you know, and it turns you into a stronger person. I mean, especially when you're being scrutinized by lots of people online for something potentially you didn't even do. So it makes a man out of you.
But to be in that, before we finish with what you're doing now and what you're going to be doing through the year, to be in that kind of bubble with all these cameras on you. You know, it's stressful enough being a chef, I can imagine. Yeah. But then having these cameras and then all these people and then thinking about how it's going to look. You came through, I think, we'll all agree, with flying colours, and you're smiling.
Well,
and
I appreciate that. You know, I'll tell you something. I think that I was lucky in the sense that I did have a very big job, you know, and I obviously take it seriously. So I think that was a really good distraction from the camera. So if you're really busy and, you know,
you just had to get on with stuff. Yeah.
Get off, yeah. You know. Although apparently I didn't actually talk for the first 2 weeks.
Really?
I was very
nervous. Stunned.
I'd never watched reality TV, so I didn't really know. I didn't know why there were 5 cameras all around. I was just like, how long is this show going to be? You know, they got like 100,000 hours of content. I'm like, bloody
That's
hell.
Crazy.
So my grandchildren will be watching this.
Exactly. Yeah. It's there for eternity. Exactly.
I want to know what they do with all that content. I hope they blow it up.
Well, or just have an outtake show. That's what.
Please, no.
Well, Ben, look, let's talk about this year. We're now, obviously, there are things going on in other parts of the world which are very worrying at the moment, as we know, in Ukraine. But let's talk about positive things for this year for you. You're doing some projects with Virgin Cruises. You're off to South Africa, I'm hearing. Is there a restaurant going to be opened as well, maybe? I hear Captain Sandy, she's opening a restaurant. Are you going to do the same?
I mean, Bobby's got 2 restaurants. I'm like, I feel like a bit of a loser over here, to be honest.
But your Virgin Cruises, that sounds great. That's in a couple of weeks or so?
Yes, it is. And so, yes, I have a group on Virgin Voyages. It's a new cruise line. I think this ship has only sailed twice or something, so it's brand new. And, yeah, so we do a Chef Ben group, and it comes with a little premium. And I do demos. I'm going to do a demo and a 4-course lunch, and I'm just kind of going to be around for them and kind of host it and just have fun with them and try and build a brand with Virgin. That'd be great. Obviously it's a big corporation, so, you know, baby steps, but hopefully we could do something. Maybe I would have a restaurant on board or something. I've always been scared of having a restaurant, like per se a restaurant, you know. Yeah. I would be more into a concept or a franchise or a sandwich shop or a ceviche bar, like something really simple, you know. Like, yeah. I just know how complicated restaurants are and, you know, the staff and the margins, and you kind of always have to be there. And I do well with my travel, so I don't really want to be locked down and I don't want to disappoint my clients by, you know, having, you know, if I turn my back, you know, who knows what's going to happen to my restaurant. So it's a tricky one, but yes, it will be there and it will happen. It's just about timing and the right concept.
Any UK travels?
I would love to go to the UK. I had some things, COVID screwed it up. I had things. I wanted to go to Sunseeker Yachts. We were going to do an amazing 3-day sort of festival over there.
Oh,
I was going to be doing demos, but it fell through, bloody COVID.
Yeah.
And then I've had other opportunities. It's just not the right climate. But yes, I'm definitely open to England. I would love to do something there for sure.
Fabulous. Be great to see you over here. Well, look, Chef Ben Robinson, let's just go through the road trip again, which sounds fabulous. Your Land Rover Discovery with your dog Mufi to wine country north of San Francisco. So north of Big Sur. I know Big Sur. I love that.
Yeah.
North of there. To Neil Young's Harvest, celebrating 50 years. So very apt, 50 years since it was released. I'm sure that's the case. I'll better check my.
It sounds right. I think I heard that. I think you're good, man.
I think I'm okay on that. And it was great to hear about, you know, Below Deck and your kind of formative years and your ventures this year. Best of success with everything you're going to be doing this year. Thanks again for your time, Ben, and really looking forward to seeing you at some point over in the UK. Maybe Sunseeker will invite you back. Sunseeker of Paul, I know them I know the company quite well,
having
been down to Paul. Ben, thanks so much for being on the Ultimate Road Trip podcast this afternoon. We'll see you soon.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you very much, James. Cheers. Take care.
I've been to Hollywood. I've been to Redwood. I crossed the ocean for a heart of gold. Searching for a heart of gold, and I'm getting old. Keeps me searching for